Welcome to Twisted Plot Podcast. Here is your host, Evelyn Marley.
Here we are, Jill. Okay, so yeah. I'm going to get into introducing you now because I feel like we are nice and warmed up for this whole conversation on perfectionism based on what we were talking about. I had your name written down, your full name written down on my other paper. Jill
Vandenhavel.
Vandenhavel. Okay, because it's spelled H-U-E-V-E-L.
H-E-U-V-E-L, yeah, which around my area, there are a lot of people that are Vandenhoovels in my area. Yep. But my husband's family is like a half hour further south than us, and everyone there says Vandenhavel. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah. Yeah. You can tell what region you're from.
Right. Based on the pronunciation of the name. Well, there you go. We met through Journey. We met through the Journey coaching program. And I noticed you were very active on the Facebook group, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. I love to see you always making posts, you always communicating with everybody. And it made me feel like, okay, she's been through the program and yet still she's here participating, which I felt more connected to the community that way.
Nice.
There's longevity for it. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you bet. And actually, that's one of the super important things that I loved when I joined Journey as well, was seeing the community and hearing how great and connected the community was. So good. I'm glad to have also contributed to that, but I just love like being a support for anybody in there. You know, I had gone through the program about 2 years ago. It was a little over 2 years that I graduated. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, any kind of support I can give to new people along the way or anybody struggling, or even I've now supported people who graduated back in 2015 and 2016. Who hadn't started anything yet, that now because of, you know, support that I put out there, that we've connected, and hopefully it's helped give them a little bit of oomph to, you know, continue going on their coaching.
So you're a coach for coaches, basically. Now you got that down. You're a coach for coaches, which is incredible, because when you put yourself out there on the Facebook group to say, mm-hmm. anybody out there want to have a call? I immediately was like, me, you know, hand up, help me. I'm just getting into this. And we got on a call and we had a conversation, which felt like 5 minutes, but was really maybe like two hours.
We ran over. So I think it was an hour and a half to 2 hours possibly.
And we got on all the topics, but I really would love to give the listeners an opportunity to get to know how you got started into coaching a little bit, just so they can get an idea if they're thinking about it, you know, what plot twisted you into the coaching experience?
Yeah. So I have always known that I wanted to be in some type of career that was going to help people in a meaningful way. Now, of course, there are all kinds of ways that that can be done. And I think almost any career you could say is helping people in a meaningful way. But for me, I went through my own personal growth. I was always really fascinated with personal development and all of that. So I would do a lot of reading. And then when podcasts came around, that was amazing. I loved that. And the deeper that I got into learning about myself, I mean, just going back a while, it kind of all started, I feel like, back when I was even like seventh grade-ish, I went through a very deep depression back then. And so at that point, I had used like poetry and other artistic things to kind of help myself out through there. And just going through that experience, I think made me already realize like, wow, there is so much more going on inside people's mental and emotional states than we realize, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think after I navigated, I thought, well, I wonder how many other people are doing the same. So I always kind of had an open mind to that sort of thing. But along the way, I got a job at a local tuxedo company, just working in their customer service. I worked there for 17 years and got to be the director of operations before I had left. Been a little twisted plot kind of thing there. I left that job, a very consistent income, and it was a very solid job, to actually become a salesperson for a local, it was a shop local company that would help local businesses with social media advertising, things like that. And so I thought, well, that's super meaningful because local businesses need a lot of help. And I loved social media advertising, all that kind of stuff too at that time. Well, it just didn't, I won't go into a lot of details, but that did not turn out the way, like it was basically some over-promising, under-delivering and things that were a bit out of my integrity. So I just decided to drop that after a couple months without having another job to back myself up on.
Ooh.
And yeah, and I'm like, okay, here we go. And then ended up finding another job at a financial advisory firm. And that I thought, okay, this is another great way to help people. I mean, finances are super duper important, right?
Absolutely.
Like, we need to make sure that we're stable. And I worked there for about 5 years and loved getting to know the clients and building the relationships and all of that. But still, it just wasn't exactly what I wanted it to be. So was, again, listening to podcasts and watching all kinds of things at that time. And suddenly, I don't know, I just heard somebody say something about coaching. And it struck me, honestly, I still remember, it was in November of 2018. It struck me like a bolt of lightning that I was like, life coach. That is what I want to do. That's what I want to be. This is my future. What do I need to like? So I started looking into it right away. I did all the research on like, is there a viable income here? How do I get started? What do I do? And presented it to my husband. And he was like, okay, yeah, this kind of sounds like it's up your alley. So absolutely keep going forward and checking into this, and very supportive. And yeah, so I ended up joining Journey then in March of 2019, that cohort, and graduating in 2019 there. And it just has been like, I mean, the classes were every Sunday. And my husband would always say, like, after I would get off those calls, he'd be like, you are in the best mood now ever. And I'm like, yeah, I love these people. I love this program. I would get lit up every time. And I still do after like calls like this and after coaching calls and all of that. I just love talking to other coaches. And I think that's what led me now to the niche of helping other coaches as well. I love hearing all the people that they're going to be helping, and just knowing like who I help is magnified by however many people they end up helping as well.
That is totally the general consensus that I get with all the other coaches. Because I got off of a call with a coach the other day and I was just like, woo, yes. You just like walk away and you're like, yeah. And it's just this kind of, it's not culty. I don't want to call it that. It's definitely this mindset where you're like, everyone needs friends like this, like to just support and just fuel that motivation and that fire, because it fuels something for them too in a lot of ways, but not in a taking from you way. It's really in a just a, you get to share and receive freely. Oh, it's just like magic.
So yes,
that's how we got started in our conversation, which led us here. And you talk about the social media market aspect of it all, and you are a dream with that. I love watching your Instagram. I was very much drawn to how you present yourself on Instagram. And I got started doing it a few months back when I was trying to kind of promote myself with it and get my personality to show a lot through that. And I think a lot of coaches who don't want to do that maybe get stuck in that kind of analysis paralysis of how they're going to do it. I would love for you to touch a little bit on that, because I think on your bio, you really specialize in that perfectionism aspect of this. And coaches can get stuck in that mindset of how am I going to do this? How come I can't just press the button with going forward? I think anybody can get stuck on that part.
Yeah.
So can you explain a little bit to me with the perfectionism part with the coaching, how you help others with that?
Definitely. And I will try not to get too long-winded on this, I guess.
But wind it all. Get it away. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, and with social media, it's such a vulnerable space if you're not used to doing that. And I think when a lot of coaches become coaches, the general idea is I want to go out and I want to help people. And many of the coaches who get started don't have a business background, don't have a social media background, don't know how to market themselves. They just want to help people. They're like, so how do I do this? Well, they didn't realize that, you know, what they were going to be getting into was a lot of learning and growth for themselves. And then when the perfectionism comes in, what doubly I think happens is that they also feel like that since they've gone through the coaching program and they know all about fear and they know all about how to push past limitations and dreaming and all of these things that we learn about, that they should be really good at it and they shouldn't have a problem with this. So it almost becomes this internalized, like, how can I put myself out there in this possibly flawed sort of way, because you're just learning, you're just growing, and be respected by people who I want to become my clients, like people that I'm trying to show myself off to. So it just creates this retreating of fear and like, I don't want to do it. And then on top of that, I think that what I fell into in the beginning was when I was new on Instagram, I didn't know anything about it. And that was right after Journey. So I've only been on it for a couple of years, and I would see, and I immediately like followed a ton of other coaches that were already in it. So I started looking around and going, oh my gosh, like all of these people know what they're doing. They're all so much more experienced. And what on earth can I even offer here? Mm. You know, and I had a lot of that fear too, which is, I think, where the imposter syndrome, because we've talked about that as well. That's where comes in, because you're always looking ahead at people who are 10 steps ahead of you rather than just being like, okay, I'm here now and that's okay. So that's kind of what I help people with right now is just launch. And when I say launch, I don't mean have everything ready before you suddenly announce that you're a coach, because that's what a lot of people want to do too. Like have your website done and have your perfect message, your perfect elevator pitch, your perfect everything. Then I'll start telling people, because then I'll be confident. And it's like, no, the confidence comes in practicing and doing it weird and clunky. And you have to be kind of bad at it. So that's what I say. I'm like, listen, the best news about being new on Instagram is that you don't have very many followers. So if you are going to screw up or say something weird, not many people are going to see it anyway.
I totally feel that on all the levels. Like in the beginning, I was like, what, 60 people here? I'm going to do whatever I want and just go for it. And now it's slowly building and I'm just like still looking at it and I'm just having a good time. It's a lot of fun still, but I can't imagine once you get to that 18,000, 25,000, and I know it's not about the followers, but your mind has to shift in a lot of ways when you see the expectation, and that's got to go in with that perfectionism.
Right. So I think in this beginning part, it's just so important to really create this solid base for yourself so you don't freak yourself out. So much later on too, because that will definitely happen. But, and I like the way you said, just having fun with it. I mean, that's really what it is. Another fellow cohort, somebody that was in Journey with me, she called it a sketch pad. And I loved that, you know, just consider it a sketch pad. You're just trying, you're doodling, you're trying new things, seeing what you like, what you don't like. And that's my biggest advice is always don't worry about how other people are doing it. Do it your way. Like you have to do it where your personality, like I know when I connected to you, I could see right away through your reels and through everything too. Like I got to know you better. It did show through that you were just like, yeah, this is just me and how I like to do things. And you could tell you weren't worried or stiff about like making sure you were doing it all the right way. And I loved that. Yeah. That authenticity is what's super important about it. And
I'm like, thank you so much. I know they can't hear me touching my heart right now, but like, thank you very much, because that's all I want. I just want my personality to shine through as best as it possibly can so they can connect with that. And the ones who really want to be a part of that can stick around.
Yeah. And that's where it's like finding the method. You know, I was terrified for a long time to do videos, to put my face out there and talk. And like, even this type of format would have had me freaking out in the beginning, because I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to say. But now it's like, just speak from your heart, right? Yeah. You know more than you think you do. And once I was able to get out on video more, then I did feel like that. Like I felt encouraged by my own, like, okay, this is where I'm showing my personality. This is where people are seeing like the silly side of me, because in writing and these serious stories of content that I was putting out there, I was hoping they'd be inspirational and that they would help people, but it's like they didn't show the little quirky things about me that I feel like make me who I am. And I want to show that kind of stuff off. So the reels have been super duper fun. Like I have been absolutely loving those. And I know you and I shared the commonality of editing or like putting in the movie clips,
the little movie like clips.
And I love it.
It's so nice. And the, you know, levity is so important. Yes. Really something that I lean hard into in my daily life, because it's therapeutic in a lot of ways. If there's something that's really deep and dark and heavy, leaning into levity, not as an escape, but really as an appreciation of gratitude for like, look at, feel the feelings about the dark part of it, but also recognize where there's dark, there's light. And you have to have both.
Yeah.
You do have to have a little bit of both in that every day to recognize that one exists and so does the other.
Right.
So that for me is important when it comes out in my, when I'm trying to be funny on Instagram or through the podcast. But
and that's who I've always been as a person too. Same thing, like any dire situation or scare, you know, if everybody gets all quiet and somber, I'm always the first to crack the joke or the first to offer something. I'm like, we need to breathe, everybody. Like, let's get a little laughter out there perhaps. And then, start that process.
And for me, I think the imposter syndrome or the awkwardness of the perfection that comes in was like, Evelyn, are you reading the room okay? Is this the time or the place? Throw it out there and see what happens.
And you know, then, and it doesn't always land.
No, no, but that's where I get to learn.
Yes, exactly.
I was looking at perfectionism and the idea of that. But before I get into that, because we're talking about the Instagram, I think with journey and with finding, and this goes for a lot of coaches out there, and I know they can relate to this because I've had this conversation with coaches, but also just for everyday life and your work environment, the term niche gets everywhere, right? Like find, I can see you're smiling about that. Find your niche, or your why. These two sayings would flip-flop back and forth, and I never thought about them ever until I started going through the coaching process. But I'm sure they were always kind of in the back of my head. I'm like, maybe if I thought about those in the beginning, I'd know that I needed to do this sooner, but I didn't. And so now, as we're going through the process of really trying to find what fits in those boxes and what works for you, and I feel more confident when I do. And you said you had to be a little clunky when saying it out loud.
Yes.
And I think one of our first conversations, I was like, I said, I'm a life coach? And you did too, I think. Somebody had said something else about, oh, I really want to do this. And I was like, yeah, you should. And then you could do that. And they're like, yeah, gosh, you're so motivational. I was like, yeah, I'm a life coach. And everyone started laughing. I was like, yeah, no, I'm like,
I really am.
I'm serious.
So it wasn't a joke.
Yeah. And they were like, and so I think finding the right way to deliver this message of what your intentions are and what you're trying to do, really, you have to play with that when you're explaining that with people. So how did you get confident in saying what you do through that process?
So honestly, that ends up becoming kind of an improv situation as well, still at this point, because what I've realized is if you have it set up as a scripted, almost we'll say, or something you've memorized, it just does, depending on who you're talking to, it just doesn't always hit right, right?
Right.
Like it's different. So it all depends on the conversation. And I just did a post on this not too long ago where I was texting one of my friends, and it's funny how friends, like once you become a life coach, how they all like judge themselves suddenly in your presence of things they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. But I had one that she was talking about that she was procrastinating or putting off something. And she's like, and I know I should be doing that or whatever. And I just replied back to, and I said, it is, you know, and she's like, you know, you're a life coach. And so I know, whatever. And I said, listen, as a life coach, I am, it's none of my business how you run your life. Like that is not, I am just here to help you walk through, do you like your results or not? And if you don't, then I'll help guide you through that. But you do it however you want. If you want to procrastinate, it makes you feel good and you actually want to, go ahead. I don't care. Who am I to say? But most people don't like it, but
oh, that goes back to that perfectionism thing, because I'll be honest, procrastination, it fuels a lot for me in a lot of ways. Like it can get me to where I need to go in a very creative way. And I didn't recognize that until Journey, when we had this whole discussion about sometimes people actively, subconsciously try to procrastinate because they know they can do better work
when under pressure.
Like, yeah. And I was like, what? I'm learning so much about myself. I had no idea.
Yeah. And it is. And it's about identifying, like, why are you procrastinating? Is it because you know you have lots of time and you're, you know, because I feel that way. There's a lot of times when it's like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely better under pressure. When I created my podcast, literally it was an idea 1 week and I was creating it the next week because I was like, I want to do this. Like, let's go and let me put myself under pressure right now to like do it. And so I got it done, but yeah, other things I've taken months to go through and then suddenly created what I needed at the end. Otherwise, are you procrastinating because you're scared or because you do want it to be perfect and you're afraid of what might come of it if you do it? And yeah, this idea of perfectionism is just, I can't believe how prevalent it is, even though we all literally know better.
Yeah.
All truly know that perfectionism is like, as a human, no. My cats, yes, they are perfect. Well, humans aren't.
So I was looking up a little bit about perfectionism, as you know, I'm trying to get my information right. And it was so funny for this podcast. You're like, so are we going to have, you said you'd maybe send an outline. I was like, yeah, I did, didn't I? Well, you know what? In the spirit of perfectionism and not being perfect about it and just really rolling with it, because I have never really done that. And everything has had to be perfect in an outline and blah, blah, blah. But I thought this is so perfect to kind of explore this idea that we can have this conversation. Yeah. And really make it about what it is. And that's the joy of, let's see where it flows. Let's see where it goes and not put a stigma of this needs to be perfect, Evelyn. Everything, the audio, this, that, blah, blah, make it so. Because that's, it's a lot. It takes a lot of your energy out and that steam.
It does. And then also, it's much harder to be fully present here in this moment, because you're worried about, okay, what am I going to ask next? Or, oh, did they answer the question? Because I feel like literally, I feel like I just didn't answer the last question that you gave me. I think we just trailed off into a whole different way, but that's okay. Like, this is what I love about this conversational flow too, is yeah, you can, and then you're here and we're in it and we're here together and it feels so much better. And for new coaches, that's also another sticking point, is like, as you're starting to coach people and you're hearing calls with them and you're thinking, oh no, they are expecting me to have all the answers, or that I need to know exactly what questions to ask. And I fell into the trap, and I've heard of a lot of other ones that I have too, of like trying to create a script of questions, making sure that you have all of that right. And it's like, oh my gosh, that takes you so far away from the actual coaching that needs to be done, because now you're not really listening to them.
Right.
Now you're not really there to hear what they're saying and get the nonverbals in between and everything else, and allow the silence. Because honestly, sometimes in a coaching session, the best part is the silence where you let them think for a little while.
Oh my gosh. Let's talk about silence for a second, just because we had to do an exercise once where we just sat there in the coaching class and sit in silence with the other person and not say anything. And this came up in an experience in everyday life where I actually was having a conversation with someone and it wasn't going well. And I had to not try and fix it and not try and get to that point where I was trying to make it all better. And I just had to sit in that silent moment, and it was awkward AF. I was like, all I want to do is fix this.
And yep.
Just sitting there in that silent moment and not having the idea that I have to perfectly fix this problem. It's so, you really have to go inward and experience that inside yourself, especially as a coach, but even as a friend, right?
Right. Absolutely. And I think, especially in the friendships, I mean, if we talk about that kind of stuff, friends, family, I mean, oh, I asked a question on my Facebook last week or the week before. And it was, what is like the piece of advice you hate hearing the most? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And holy cow, did I get a lot of responses on that one of ways. And I thought about it, that all of these things that people were hearing the person who's giving that advice, obviously they have good intentions, right? They're just trying to help, but like, mm-hmm. but they don't know how. And I think that's been a big part of like, if there could be a class in school that we teach really good, effective communication and active listening skills, you could do probably an entire semester on it, like to practice that and get used to how to listen for your friends, how to be a supportive person rather than just throwing out the suggestions and the advice and the things that they should be doing, or have you tried that or anything like that? Like I feel like without the training, and for me, I had it before too, it's like you get uncomfortable with that silence and not knowing what to say. And suddenly when something gets awkward, you're like, oh no, like I'm going to say something wrong. So then you just like, oh, it'll be okay. It'll be fine. You'll get over it. You know, and maybe that's true, but maybe, you know, I still have to tell my husband all the time when I have a problem, I don't necessarily want you to fix it. I just want you to listen. I want you to know where I'm at.
The acknowledgement mm-hmm. of just someone understanding that they're there with you in that space to just acknowledge, oh, this person's really going through something.
Right.
I'm here with you. Because I think a lot of the times it does come to that. And sometimes we don't want that unsolicited advice. We just want that acknowledgement.
Oof. Yeah. And sometimes they just need to speak it. Like whatever it is that's going on, they just need to use their words and you just need to be there so they can do that. And they might come up with their own answers by doing that.
That's the end goal, right? A lot of people don't know that about coaching. It's like, we're not there for the solutions. We're there just for you to help be there for you to come up with the solutions, which is like a big difference in all of the coaching versus therapy. So
yeah, so powerful. Yeah.
I want to go back to the three forms of perfectionism because I did look this up and I'm very excited to talk to you about it because I don't know
about the three forms maybe. So you might be getting me here. We'll see. All right.
Well, I mean, you will as soon as you hear them because everyone can relate to them. So there's the three forms that it says on Psychology Today was self-oriented, which is like the self-conscious version of the standards we set for ourselves, those high expectations of productivity and career. And I'm curious for you, were you a perfectionist growing up or did you have those tendencies for yourself? And then what are the tools that you used to kind of talk yourself out of needing to have that perfectionism?
What's kind of funny is I was reflecting on this before this call of like, how has it showed up in different areas of my life? And I do have another thing that I kind of identify as an overachiever, which has sidecars of perfectionism and all of this kind of stuff too. It goes hand in hand with it. So I definitely, the overachiever mentality was to keep pushing and achieving and doing more, and which hence why like my career growth in the one company I was with that I just kept like, okay, what's my next position or what can I do next or what more can I learn to make me more valuable? Because I think that's what we do is we're like, okay, the more success we have, the more valuable we are. And I think perfectionism goes with that too. That's like, that's where value is determined. It's not just based on who you are. It's based on what you've achieved. And that is like one of the biggest things to work on. I think when you have perfectionism is like connecting to like, okay, no, how do I have inherent worth just for being here? Like even without having these achievements and you're usually looking for that external validation. So whether it be from your parents, you didn't get it from your parents and maybe won't. So now maybe there's a boss you're trying to, or, you know, in your friend circle or whoever you're trying to get validation from that you're always kind of working through that. But I didn't necessarily experience a ton of perfectionism along the way, because there was a lot of times that I was able to just move. I didn't get stuck by too much, but there is a caveat to that I also will only, I say will, now I've done, used to, right? I'm recovering. where I wouldn't do something and also unless I knew I was going to be good at it. And there were a lot of things that I was kind of talented at already. So I was great with spreadsheets or I was great with whatever. So if I could create these reports or do these things and get into the world of which I knew I was going to excel, then I had no problem just like moving forward that way. But if there was a task or anything that was, oh no, that's way unfamiliar, then I'd stay away. It has affected my personal life in strange ways where even something as simple as literally the game Guitar Hero,
Okay, go on. Tell me more.
So this was back when my husband and I believe we'd been dating for just short of a year at this point. It was Christmas time. And I think he had like either gotten for Curry, bought it. He bought the Guitar Hero game and I had not played it yet. And the whole family was around and everybody was just like, oh, let's play. Let's figure this out. And nobody really knew what they were doing. But I was terrified of putting myself on display doing something that I didn't know how to do. So I refused. Like I would not play the game like everybody else did. And I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, I don't want to. I don't think it looks like anything I would like. He literally left like a month later for his sister's wedding in Punta Cana. Uh-huh. And I'm like, let me borrow that game once. I literally played it obsessively while he was gone. And by the time he got back, I was so good at it. And I was like, okay, now I'll play in front of people. Like, how weird is that? Right. I was like,
I mean, I get it. You had to get yourself to a point where you felt comfortable.
Yeah. And like, I just couldn't deal with the fact that I might not be good at it in front of a group of family members, like people that I was close with that I really liked. It's not like I thought anybody was going to judge me harshly, or at least logically, I knew that, but obviously somewhere in my brain, it was like protection. We can't do this.
Right. Survival. If you do this, who knows what could happen? That's definitely. Oh, and it says that too. The idea that it makes me uneasy to see an error in my work. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Must be full potential at all times.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, ouch. Wow. Like, yeah, that would get me. And like, even things at work too, like in my career, that as I would, I would move forward. But if something did get screwed up, oh, I would shut down so bad. Like I would definitely like feel horrible. And that's a part of it too, is I think a part of the imposter syndrome and all of that that comes into is like, you really want to be perfect and you don't want to admit that you have these flaws. But then when something does happen, then you're like, yeah, that was me. And then you really internalize that and take that as a, and it just kind of continues the cycle.
Yeah.
I feel like of, yeah, we definitely can't do that again because that did not feel good. So more perfect next time, you know.
And that will stop you from really going forward because you're like, I don't know if I really want to get to that headspace again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So the second is other oriented, and it's about holding friends, family to a higher standard. And I can't stand other people close to me making mistakes. It's very associated with being kind of like in a judgment space when you have that, which it sounds like there's a lot of expectations and control of the outcome. So like, maybe I don't trust that person to do the job right. I should just take over and do it myself.
Okay. So the first part of what you were saying did not resonate with me at all, as far as like people failing in my presence or anything like that. Like,
well, that's, no, not as coaches. We're like, well, no, never. Like, you got to mess up to learn.
Fail away. Everybody else can do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can tell them it's all about the learning experience.
Yeah.
But as far as the maybe not delegating or that kind of thing, I think I did fall into that trap, at least in my younger years of my career. I think I had gotten better at that as I gained more responsibility and was in charge of more people. Then I kind of, and I think that's kind of where my coaching first started kind of coming in, was in training other people, knowing like, okay, you have to be able to screw this up to learn more from it. And even then getting to the point of going, I have to let them, even though I know this isn't going to go great. Like I might be aware that a mistake might happen here, but it's not that big of a deal. So go ahead and do it. And I'll be here to.
Oh my gosh. As you're saying that and the words you were saying, I could easily just see myself talking about my kids and being like, no, I'll just do it for you. Right. And not getting to that headspace where I have to let them make the mistakes and just kind of let it happen and unfold naturally and not be the person to do those things for them, because otherwise how are they going to learn, right? How are they going to do it? And it goes for all those things, and not even parenting, even like a partner too. I can't find this. I'll just do it, right? I'll find it. But it's not allowing or just releasing that kind of control to be like, well, they got to find it themselves. They'll get better at finding it. And then that kind of like a little bit codependency-y. Let's talk a little bit. Like maybe right? It touches a little bit into that bracket of I'll just do it for them so that way they don't have to, you know, and I can just control that part, which is, oof, hard hitting. Like we're working on that. Talk about, people pleasing, codependency, and then the boundary work. Wow. So
Yeah, we could go longer on that.
Yeah, we're sticking away from that today. So other oriented, I would definitely say that would fall into a little bit of that codependency bracket.
For
what it stands for. Socially prescribed is the third one. So we can talk about Instagram the whole time for this one, which is the idea to be good enough to meet society's standards.
Mm-hmm. Gosh. And that is what a tangled web, because you don't even know what society's standards are.
No.
So it's like the whole thing of like, I'm going to try to be what I think they want me to be. So it's not just what they actually do want, because most of the time they don't care. And I say that sometimes to my coaching clients in the most loving way, like, because it can come off good and bad. Like nobody cares.
Right.
That can be like, but I want people to care. And it's like, well, the people who want to care will care about the message you're trying to get out. But sometimes people just don't pay attention to you anyway, when you're out there, not nearly as much as you think they do. So yeah, it's like socially perceived kind of stuff there for sure.
The questions around it is, people around me expect me to succeed at everything I do. My family expect me to be perfect. And it's that whole expectation of outcomes thing where you have no control over that. You have no idea how anything is going to be received. But as long as your intention is really pure in what you're trying to put out there, then the most authentic version of yourself can shine through. And if you can even just accept that you're going to make those mistakes and drop the fear of the rejection and the scarcity and all the other stuff that goes along with it, whoo, you're doing it. Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going forward. Push through.
You know, and you brought up the thing about like family expectations too, and I think that can be tough because sometimes your parents or your family can be very blatantly honest with you about what they expect from you.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not what you want to do, right? So it goes completely against your nature. So then people pleasing, we come back into that one, right? Do you do what they want you to do because that's what they expect? Or do you go against their very direct wishes sometimes and do what's good for you? And that is a really, really tough thing to navigate, especially for people who have dealt with this kind of, you know, controlling or directing behavior from their parents since they were really young. Like if that's something that's always been a thing, it's really, really hard to break that. And even realize when you tell people like, be authentic and just be you and do what you want to do. Some people are like, I don't know what I want to do.
Right.
I haven't found enough of a connection with myself to even get it, to even understand like, what would I do given the choice and the freedom? Because I've never had that before.
And then you're looking at, okay, be authentic, but really the reflection of who you're around and the people that you are, that is, it can come back as an idea to yourself of like, oh, this is how I'm perceived. It's working. I'm just going to keep going with it, even though it really doesn't ring true to anything to yourself inside, which just holds you back from pushing forward and then gets stuck in that imposter syndrome again of, well, am I good enough to be this way, even though I feel more aligned with it?
Right. And honestly, one of the most messed up parts of this perfectionism, like this type about it, is that if you have been one way all of your life and everybody knows you this way and you suddenly go, no, wait a minute, that's just been me subscribing to what everybody else wants. I'm actually this other way. Everybody around you is going to make you feel like an imposter.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I don't even know you anymore. This isn't you. This isn't the you I know. And you're like, I know, because I've just never, I've never been me. You know, like you're just trying to get them to understand, like, surprise, you've never really known, yeah, I yeah guess. But then in your brain, you're, you know, it is that constant struggle of like, are they right? Are they seeing something that I'm not? Do they know me more than I know me? But
yeah.
Yeah. So that is really, really tricky.
Gets back to that identity of self and how you feel fulfilled in that self-love tank, yes, that you have filled up. And can you really just meet your own values and expectations and just be you?
Yeah.
And accept that maybe that person isn't going to stick around, or maybe right that, you know, relationship isn't what it was. And that is the, I think, the hardest pill to swallow with all of it, is that when you do step into that space, what you're doing for yourself is really for yourself. The ones that really want to hop on that train with you, they're going to rally so hard around you and really be there to support this, because yeah, they've always seen that side of you, that aspect. Oh, we knew you were in there. Come on out, you know? Right. Yeah. Come on to play. Yeah. Now just live your life. But then the other ones who you've really felt like you've had to either maybe use the socially prescribed or other oriented mm-hmm versions of perfectionism just to be in that box, just to keep that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hard to let go of.
It is. And it, because, I mean, back in the, what, Maslow's hierarchy of needs and, you know, yeah, social acceptance and having people around you, it's a part of your survival. Like you, you need a group of people around you. You can't be alone. And mm-mm, you, and I think that's what your brain thinks is like, oh no, if I lose all my friends, that's it. Like I'm done. But you're gonna find new friends. You're gonna find people who do, like everybody gravitates to the energy that they enjoy. And you're gonna find that, like, I know my circle of healers and loving people in the world since joining the coaching program has, it's amazing how many yeah enlightening conversations I have on a regular basis. And that, like, that's everything, you know? And yeah, there might've been some friends along the way that I have had to disconnect with, because I just yeah knew it wasn't healthy and it wasn't good for me and good for my growth to keep going. And it's scary and you grieve it like any other relationship. It's sad, but you have to ultimately do what's best for your own soul when it comes down to that.
I completely agree. And I like that you said grieve it. The idea of gratitude, it was during a workshop that I had this conversation with someone. And when you can go back into that gratitude headspace of being thankful for what it was in the mm-hmm moment that it was, and just have that be like, God, yeah, it was fun. It was yeah great. Like that space was really, really great. And I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And then moving forward into the different space and not, you don't, I don't know, like, I don't know if I necessarily need to let go as much as, or we need to let go of that relationship or friendship or family member, right? Because mm-hmm we have to see them, but accepting them for where they are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you definitely have to do the same, because you can't expect other people to change then according to your own standards right either. So
that compassion yeah chip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so not to get deep or anything, but that was the crux of it. Like, I really just like the tangible ideas of the perfectionism. But for tools, I was wondering if you could give the listeners, because analysis paralysis is like the main thing I think I get a lot of people that ask me about, how can I get out of that analysis paralysis mode when I'm stuck there and I cannot go forward?
So for the analysis paralysis piece, it's a bit different than just the perfectionism portion. Like usually analysis paralysis is like, okay, I have five different options of a website mm-hmm hosting service, or like you have too many options and you can't choose what is best or that kind of thing. So I think for that, I say limit yourself. Find, if you're researching things, take two or three, stop looking. stop looking.
I love that.
Because I was kind of doing a little bit of kind of background research on all this too. And I don't know if you had seen, there's something called the JAM experiment.
No, tell, so please.
I can't credit who ran it, but it was some kind of study that was done. And it was at a farmer's market or something like that. There is like this booth, and there was one that had six different options of jam flavors. and another one that had 30 different options, and to see, okay, well, which one would create the most sales? You have more variety, right? So I guess a lot more people were attracted to the idea of looking at the 30. They got more activity there, but they only had like 3% sales closing, where the one with six had 30%. Because people didn't have so much to choose from that they're like, nope, here are your options and here you go. And it was much easier to choose. And there's like, at some point your brain waves just go like way too overwhelmed and it gives up. Like I can't even make a decision at this point. So it's so easy to freeze in that. And I think with new coaches, they get into not just, you know, I brought up the website thing, but they come up with all these things, right? So it's my website, do I do Instagram? Do I do Facebook? What is my package? What is my pricing? There's a million decisions to make right off the get-go. So that's particularly what I like to help people with. Once you get solid, you're going to start making your money. And mm-hmm. I don't want money to be the only thing that you're worried about when you're a coach anyway. Like, it's easy for us to shift focus sometimes when we're like, but I want to make an income and a career out of this. But what I'm here to do is like right in that beginning, when you have all of these crazy things that you're going through of making these decisions, it's like, no, let's make some solid decisions. I'll help you go through that and decide what is important to you. What are you wanting to do because you want to do it and not because everybody else is telling you you should? One person that I'm working with now, she's like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with Instagram. I don't know that I want to do that. And I'm like, well, then you don't have to.
Right.
And I said, I'm like, give me 10 in the next week with 10 ways that you can find your people without using Instagram. And by the time we got off the call, she had already thought of three that she was super excited about. And I'm like, see, there's not just one way. Yeah. But if you like Instagram, then do that. Whatever it is that you enjoy doing will be the best way for you to use your energy in the way it should be anyway. But yeah, so when it comes to the analysis anyway, that's kind of what it is like, narrow your options and then also decide like, what is important right now? Like, what do I actually need to decide right now? Can I keep moving forward without knowing what my CRM program is going to be? I always kind of say like the basics, I would say, is get a calendar and make sure you have that because that's easier.
Great advice. That is really good advice.
Because that's like the easiest way to like get things set up. But other than that, you can just roll with it as you go. And it's okay to just, yeah. Like, and will there ever really be a wrong thing to do? We always kind of talk about with perfectionism, everything's a learning experience anyway, mm-hmm. you know, and coming to the analysis paralysis of like, okay, but if I decide this, maybe it should have been that, you know, and it's like, no, you're just doing what you need to learn by, and that's okay. Switch it later if you want to, that's okay too. But
first of all, I want to go back to that jam experiment just for one second because yeah. It reminded me of In-N-Out versus the Cheesecake Factory, right? So
I don't know that one.
Oh my gosh. You don't, because you're not where I am. In-N-Out Burger. You've heard of In-N-Out Burger?
Yeah, I've heard of In-N-Out Burger. Okay. And we have a Cheesecake Factory in the state. But yeah.
So the Cheesecake Factory has every single option of food you could ever possibly imagine on the menu. Like, it's 12 pages long, just of food, and then like 14 of drinks, and then this, right? So you go in there and you're like, anything you could ever imagine is in this book.
Yes.
Right? And then there's In-N-Out, which is like, we have five things. Burgers, yeah. French fries, milkshakes, sodas, what do you want? And they can like rearrange it different ways, and they've got secret menus and everything. But for the most part, it's just like that simple idea of this is what we have. Now, both are highly successful. They do really well. But right. I get a lot of anxiety when I look at those menus that have too many things on them because it's just too much.
Yeah. There's a place nearby that has kind of a book. And also they serve breakfast until like 2 p.m. So when you're there for lunch, you're like, first decision is, do I even want breakfast or lunch? I need to make that decision first. Then bring me that menu. Yeah. Then I'll go through there. And again, yes, all their food is great, but yeah, it is. It can be super overwhelming when you're like flipping pages on a menu. You're like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I'm just really hungry and I want everything.
What is it when somebody else has something that you think you want to order and then they order it, but you don't? And then food envy?
Yes.
Oh, that's the worst. You're like, oh, yeah,
absolutely.
That.
And then I'm sure you've said the classic line too, that you're like, everybody else order, I'll be ready by the time they get to me.
Yes.
Like, to order, because you know that under pressure, you'll make that decision.
It's me. I heard that the other day. I'm like, okay, start on the other side and then I'll get there, right?
So that's another thing that they say actually for that is to create a deadline for yourself. Now you have to hold yourself to it depending on how well you hold yourself accountable. But, but yeah, if you set a deadline and be like, I have to make this decision by Friday, then you put yourself in that, like you create that pressure for yourself.
I'm deadline girl. That's me. Yeah. I'm like, if there was a superhero deadline lady, there she is. I need to put that deadline for myself in order to do it. And sometimes I'll do... like I'll make my video previews of the podcast and I'll be like, okay, throw it out on a date. And now you have to do it by then. If you don't, you'll be disappointing the masses. By the masses, I mean myself and my brain, right? Because that's the date I set up for myself.
Yeah. That's so good for you that you can do that. I just read the book totally off base here,
but
the four tendencies. I don't know if you saw my post on that the other day.
No, I didn't see it.
So it's Gretchen Rubin, and it's like these four tendencies of either you're an upholder, an obliger, a questioner, or a rebel. And it's based on how you get things done. So if you're accountable internally or externally and that kind of thing. So you have that like external kind of thing where you're like, I will meet outer expectations. And it sounds like a little bit of inner as well. Inner. That it's like, you know that it's, so you're probably an upholder because they meet both inner and outer expectations. Okay. So you and I are actually completely opposite. If that's the case, because I am a rebel, I resist inner and outer expectations. Meaning if I set myself a deadline for Friday, like say if I was like, okay, I need to have this project done by Friday, I immediately in my brain is like, you can't tell me what to do, like to myself.
You're not the boss of me, but you are.
And,
but
and the phrase of it in the book is like, you can't make me, neither can I, is definitely what it is. So we have to actually, like rebels have to trick ourselves into different things and being like, nope, this is totally my choice. I don't have to. And we also have to very much connect to our why. You talked about the why earlier, but if we know that we have a high impact with what it is that we're supposed to be doing or that we said we were going to do, then we will absolutely stick to it. But we also love challenges. So if somebody comes to me and actually at my old job that I grew 17 years in, people doubted me a lot along the way. And so my rebellion side said, watch me. Like, you think I can't do this? I'll show you I can. And I will do something just on purpose to show somebody like that what they think about me is wrong. It's crazy. It's kind of weird.
I gotta read this book. Now I'm very curious about all this. And I'll link it all in the notes for the podcast. So everyone, if they want to check it out. But
so I use that for my coaching now too, the tendencies. I do a quiz and then that way I know how to like navigate what people are motivated by as well. It definitely helps. Yeah.
So tell me for yourself, for future Jill, where do you see a plot twist for yourself in your career as a coach? Are you going to be holding retreats? What do you have envisioned? This is more of like, okay, the plot twist at the beginning was how you got into coaching. Now we're like plot twist manifestation mode. So where do you see yourself with all of this?
It's interesting because when you're asking the question, I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know. But as soon as you mentioned the word retreats, it made me think about, so there's this house that is called the Mushroom House is what we call it.
Okay.
But my dream has been since, I don't know, the early 2000s to own this house, come hell or high water someday. But it's basically, it's built like underground kind of, like into a hill. And then I'll have to share a picture with you, but it's this very like the way that it looks. And then the chimneys stick out from like the ground, which is the roof, but, and they look kind of like little mushrooms. So that's why they call it that. But I was able to go in there one time because somebody previously had broken in. It was abandoned at the time.
Oh no.
I did not break in. I might be a rebel, but I would not do that. But the door was already open. So I was like, all right, I got to check this place out. Cause I had kind of stalked it for a long time before that, but yeah, the inside is just beautiful. And it's a really cool area. So I've always wanted to buy this place and do something cool with it. So that would be my twisted plot, would be that I would get to own this house.
Okay.
And I would absolutely host retreats there and have that be kind of like a little getaway area. And then there's a really nice lodging place that's right down the road that could be like, I already have that all kind of figured out as far as like how all of that would work. But yeah.
So this is in motion.
So not entirely because it's all in pause. I did once reach out to, like, it was up for sale a lot of years ago and it was not the right time. I like literally stalked internet records, like whatever. Like I was like the person with the microfiche, I felt like at the library, you know, like looking into things. But I found the person, the owner, and then found them on Facebook and messaged them, not knowing if they, you know, you don't always see messages. People aren't your friends or whatever, but I messaged and just asked like, oh, are you the person who owns that house? And I think it took a few weeks, but I did get a response back. And she was like, yeah, it was actually built by a family member. So we're keeping it in the family for now. And I said, okay. I said, should that ever change? I said, just please like keep me in mind. Aww. That like, as in she, I think she probably just thought I was a total weirdo, but yeah, I definitely put myself out there on that one because I'm like, I could not see like having that thing go up for sale again and then miss an opportunity if it ever did present itself. But it's kind of one of those things where I do have faith in the universe that someday this will all, like when you talk about manifesting and all of that, like it's been something, like I've said, since the early 2000s, and it has not left my brain since then. But I have an album on my Facebook page that I'll share with you so you can see it too, but it's beautiful. Yeah.
I'm really excited for this journey for you. In the meantime, we want to get people over to your page, your space, all the things, Jill, so they can come find you and get help with those perfectionism tendencies that get them stuck. So where can everybody find you?
Yep. So I'm on Instagram and I have a Facebook page. Both of them would be at jill.bhcoaching. And I have a website. Here's my braces. That's jillvh.com. Yes. And you can find me there. And yeah, message me. Instagram is probably my most active, although last week I did take some time off Zoom, but I'm looking forward to some new reels coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. We can't wait to see those. And I want to drop this part at the end because I've been waiting to say it. You also have a podcast. If I didn't say it in the beginning, you have a podcast and it's called There's a Coach for That. So if you all that are listening right now are just like, I can't get enough of Jill, where can I find her? I want to hear more of what she has to say. She has this podcast. It's found on Apple, Spotify, I think anywhere you listen to podcasts as well, right, Jill? Is that?
Yep, that is correct.
So there's a coach for that. And basically you interview other coaches and it ranges from end of life coaching, which I found very interesting, to what is the other one? Oh, the self-awareness. Yeah.
That was a great one too. Yeah. And I love it. I mean, all the niches are so unique and I don't want it to add any more, you know, niche pressure to anybody who... Hello. But I think it shows good variation though, to be like, okay, these are literally all the types of ways you can go and, you know, just learn your journey from there, because every one of these coaches has really experienced their own personal journey to get them to where they are. And I love interviewing them about that as well, to hear their stories and what compels them to help and just get the word about coaching out even more, because there's still plenty of people that don't know about it and don't know how we help people. So yeah, that's my mission with the whole thing, is just create more awareness, create more compassion in a world where, you know, sometimes there's a lack of understanding of other people's viewpoints and what they're going through. So yeah.
So well said. We have to end it right there because that was just perfect. Oh, I said the B word. Oh, dare perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Jill, for coming on. I'm going to have you on again so we can, you know, go in through hard on that people pleasing and boundary work that we always love to talk about.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
See you soon.
All right.
Okay. Don't hang up.
Yep. I do that every time too. I'm like, stay there. Hold on. Don't hang up.
Thank you for joining us. Tune in next time, and remember, stay twisted.